Hello, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The Dev Team. I'm Mark Onsman.
I'm Daryl Kilzer.
And I'm Jake Overall.
We're a group of developers and bootcamp instructors here to help you in joining the world as a software developer. Whether you're a self-taught developer, bootcamp grad, or a CS student, we're here to help you fill in some of the knowledge you need to grow in your role as a junior developer.
In this episode, Mark starts us off with the word of the day, abstraction. From there, I kick off the dev news with a chat about GitHub's new profile options. And lastly, Jake wraps us up with a discussion on strategies for a junior to jump into larger monolithic applications.
Okay, well, I'm going to start us off with the word of the day. So the word I picked for us to kind of talk a little bit more about today is abstraction. And so for those of you not familiar with abstraction, it is a pillar of object-oriented programming. So I felt it was something that actually, looking at some of the other pillars and looking at some of the other vocab and philosophies around software development in general, abstraction finds itself pretty much everywhere. So just as a definition, textbook-wise, abstraction is that process of exposing essential features of an entity while hiding a relevant detail. And we actually get into this a lot as instructors, and we actually recently had a conversation about, you know, how much should we abstract some of the complexities away from students as we're teaching them, as compared to when we're, you know, wanting to actually learn pieces of information. We might have something that's far more complex than what we're able to cover as, for you as a junior that we might actually want to abstract at a later time. And I think abstraction comes in many ways, and there's actually a lot of risks that come into play. This is something we've talked about before as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think abstraction is kind of one of those things, and I think you could maybe even say the same for all of the pillars of object-oriented programming. There's definitely overlaps between them, right? There's the concept of, I'm going to move code away, and in the process of moving code away, I'm not only abstracting something, but I may also be doing it for the purposes specifically of encapsulation. Right. But when we're talking abstraction in particular, and that concept of saying, well, let's pull away the more complex pieces of the code so that the juniors don't get lost in the sauce type of idea. There's several different strategies and several different ways that we can abstract. And there are certain things that we should think about as seniors to say, you know, is this something that I should pull away because I don't want anyone touching it? Because it's a crucial part of our application? Or is this something that I want pulled away because it's just kind of reducing the complexity of the current file where I am going to need my juniors, but it's not necessarily mission critical?
Something that I think is really cool about it too, that's really important for juniors to kind of think about is when you abstract away things, you're making your code more generic and a little more robust, able to handle a lot more inputs and outputs in kind of that sense. They get to write a little less brittle code. Things go the way they're intended to go. And so it's just kind of an important concept for juniors to really start to master.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we've talked about as a class and something that juniors and pretty much anybody needs to know is that non-true coding word, but dry, writing dry code, right? Don't repeat yourself. And abstraction really comes into play with that concept. I think, though, one of the things we've seen, and we've kind of made comment about it, is that the line of essentially that every layer of abstraction can become a layer of confusion, right? And there is that concept of overly abstracting to say, okay, now I have this really robust abstraction, but you have to provide it like 30 different configuration options to actually make it do what you need. And that happens all the time.
Right. And I think, you know, to me, if that's a piece of code that you've written specifically, you've pulled it apart, if you have to supply so many parameters just to use the thing, you may have stepped into that point of unnecessary abstraction, right? And I think that there's also those concepts of saying, we want to pull this code away, but no one else anywhere is ever going to use it again, right? And I would also consider that an unnecessary layer of abstraction that simply just adds confusion, right? The things that I definitely like to abstract away are some of those like more utility type classes. Utility type functions, we're going to reuse this thing over and over and over again in lots of different places. So let's abstract it. Let's write the function once, right? Let's write that dry code. rather than rewriting that same if statement or that same variable or that same thing in 100 different files, let's abstract to a utility that's really simple to use, right? And if the function of the method, the signature, isn't simple, then, you know, you're getting into that point where, you know, if you have to know too much about the method just to call the method, then you don't actually have a good abstraction there.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I always think of those little survival tools, you know. You can always tell when you've stepped kind of over that line of, and abstracted too far when you see those little tools of, hey, there's on one end it's got the hammer, on the other end it's got the axe, you know, multi-tools, this army knife. There's a lighter on here too. So it's very easy to kind of get to that point, but I think it's also easy to notice when it's become obvious. If this thing's pretty tedious to use, you know, maybe I need to take a step back and look at where I've gone with this.
And I think one of the things that I would encourage juniors to look at when they have that concern of, am I over-abstracting or is this thing, you know, becoming too complicated, is to remember other principles, right? I think that you look at the solid principles and single responsibility being the big one. And that's like a whole nother topic entirely. But, you know, if you look at your abstraction, it should still only have the one job. And that's 100% what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 1,000% agree with that.
All right. So, you know, and I think that one of the things and advice we would give specifically when it comes to abstraction is this idea of saying, you know, there is such a thing as over-abstraction. And at the beginning, it's okay to have some of that duplications of code, but start to be mindful of it and start to take those things and where can I pull out utilities and where can I reuse that functionality? Because these two pieces of data are certainly coupled in their functionality and I want to be able to have stronger functionality across the board.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I think it's also one of those things to definitely keep in mind. The world of software development, it's crazy big. It's crazy complex. Abstraction is one of the pillars of object-oriented programming, right? So don't think you're going to master it in a single afternoon. You're not going to master it in a month. It's going to take years and years of practice to really get a firm grasp on abstraction as a principle. But the earliest concepts of it are fairly simple. And as you kind of get more and more into the career field, you'll start to realize, you know, those unnecessary layers of abstraction, the, you know, the places where you should absolutely be abstracting and you haven't, or you didn't, you know, it's one of those things that you'll always go back and look at the code that you wrote 6 weeks ago and say, this thing's a mess and I'm going to refactor it. I'm going to clean it up. And in that process, you know, I myself have been very guilty of over abstraction and, you know, pulling things apart. And then, you know, 6 months
I've
later, I go back into
like that.
It again,
no, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And it's always great when you go back into it 6 months later and you're like, oh, I don't remember what anything does. And, you know, at that point, I can't even, you know, make my way through my own code because everything is so far pulled apart that it's just really hard to identify what any one piece of thing is doing.
All right, Daryl. So tell us what's new in software development.
So something new that GitHub kind of dropped on us, maybe been a week or so, it hasn't been too long. You can create kind of an extended profile right on the front of your profile page for GitHub. You just create a repository with your username, so it's a little bit like the landing page where you had your username.github.io. This one's just straight up your username, and you initialize the repository with a README file. What this does is it gives you kind of the ability to write some markdown and have that prominently displayed right at the top of your profile page.
So. Yeah, I think that that's actually a really cool thing that GitHub just recently introduced. And I like when you actually type in just your username on GitHub as a repository, you get this little pop-up now that, you know, says, hey, you found this like secret thing, right?
Secret.
Makes you feel kind of cool. It's one of those, you know, things that eventually everyone will know that it exists and everyone will have a profile or extended profile on GitHub. But for right now, it's just kind of definitely one of those like, you know, super secret things, you know, that you kind of stumble across and can identify. And I also think that it's a really nice thing that we will also start to see from an employability standpoint is if I can go simply to your GitHub profile and see a couple of snapshots, because I think you can load images and things. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, it's actually a great place to like create a custom banner with images or HTML, even anything of that nature. Kind of put a little personal flair on your page for sure. It also gives you a nice spot to link. You know, GitHub only supports email and a single landing page. And what's the other one? Is it Twitter? Twitter. They only support Twitter. So you can add, you know, little pins and badges and things like that to point to other social platforms you might have.
Nice. Yeah. I'm sure at some point it's going to be, you know, over abused, and you're going to see, you know, these profile pages that are just atrocious.
Can you say MySpace at all?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Someone already created like a MySpace little pin. My top favorites. Most people that star me or comment on this.
My fave. Yeah. And I think I have to agree, right? With Jake, when it comes to like the social aspect of it and people checking out your GitHub profile, right? Now, not only are they going to see like the top, like, four or six like projects and repositories that you've highlighted, but you can also kind of give yourself a little bit of that personal flair. I think definitely you'll see it become similar in that aspect of a use case of like a LinkedIn profile. Is probably the closest thing. And quite frankly, you know, if yours does look like MySpace, I might judge you.
Yeah, when trying to make those hiring decisions, right? I think that GitHub is definitely one of those platforms where I try to still stay more to the professional side of things, like my LinkedIn and things of that nature, because so many employers are using it as a reference point to evaluate your code, make hiring decisions based upon, you know, the projects and kind of the coding experience that you do have, especially for those juniors trying to get into the career field.
Absolutely. You can do all kinds of cool stuff with it, too. It supports like GitHub Actions and serverless functions and all kinds of stuff like that. I immediately thought of, hey, maybe I can make a video game on here or some sort of game. Went out there and kind of did a Google search, and someone had already put in a chess game. So every time you move a piece, it actually has a GitHub action that runs, changes the code, pushes a commit and everything, and updates it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, Daryl, is that why I've seen you playing a lot more of the dinosaur game lately?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's on there, too. Someone else has that as well. So
that's great. You know, I think it's definitely it's a cool little feature. It's a nice little thing to kind of spruce up your profile a little bit. And especially right now, if you jump in there, it's something that will set you apart, you know, again, until everyone will eventually know about it. But for right now, it's definitely one of those like secret sauce things. So.
Soon you'll be able to follow your favorite programmer's Spotify list on there.
Yes. We all listen to our own genre of music, and I think the polka has definitely really helped my programming ability. So, Jake, what do you have for us in our deep dive?
Yeah, so this is a topic that I think it actually comes up quite often. It's one of those things that, regardless of how many years' experience you have in the career field, it's always a difficult thing to achieve and to accomplish. And that is the concept of diving into an existing code base and actually understanding what the heck anything does, and how do you just kind of acclimate yourself to this new environment, right? And again, I throw that out there right at the beginning that regardless of how many years you have in this career field, it is a difficult thing to jump into a pre-existing project and just start navigating your way through it. And I think especially as a junior level developer, this is one of those, you know, the very first time you open up a Visual Studio project and it has over 600 files in it, and you just kind of like die a little bit inside because it took 15 minutes to launch Visual Studio, right?
So 15 days, it's a day per minute.
Absolutely. And it can just be absolutely just terrifying, overwhelming, especially when you're starting that first job or that first project. But, you know, the thing that I just want to throw out there immediately is that's also intimidating to the rest of us, right? Those of us who have years of experience in this career field, it's still intimidating to open up that brand new project and to see all of the different files and just alone by the file structure think, nope, I'm a nobat of this, right? And so that's kind of one of the topics that I really want to kind of discuss today and maybe get some tips and tricks from you guys as to, you know, when you open up that project, what's your approach for saying, all right, I guess let's dive in. I have some feature requests. I have some bug fixes. I have this, that, and the other that I'm now responsible for. I've inherited this project, or I'm stepping into it as a brand new team member. What do you do?
Yeah, so kind of my first approach on that kind of stuff is, for me, I typically will say, you know, what is the feature? What is the bug I'm looking for? And try and narrow that scope, right? Because especially in those monolithic applications, right, it can be completely overwhelming. And you're not going to read it like a dictionary cover to cover by any means. And, you know, once upon a time, you know, code was printed out and sure, you look through the documentation, but it's not the case, right? And definitely in those files, it's impossible and you're not going to get anywhere. So for me, it's definitely focus on the very first time you're opening it, see, you know, find what you need. And then growing from there, right, while you're working on that project, find everything that that piece of code touches. And kind of, in theory, all code should touch all other code through some series of connections one way or another. So just start to build out those branches. Start with that very focused spot and then follow some of those trails. You can fall down rabbit holes that way, though. So I would offer that cautionary, like, oh, try to stick to one layer at a time. Of the application as you're peeling it back. And if nothing else, you know, certainly if you can't find that starting point, right, that's what the senior is there for. They are there to help you. Hey, they've been through this application for a while. It might even be their code monster, baby, whatever you want to call it. And so, you know, you may need to dive into that from their perspective a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you, right? But let's say, you know, yes, you're given this very specific task, you know, how do you go stop the code right there? How do you evaluate that, right? How are you doing like a massive control F? Like, are you finding it off of keywords? You know, what about that, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the approach I take. It's very similar to what Mark was saying, but my first task is, well, a little bit like what you're saying, it's this giant black box, right? And I just want to make a couple smaller black boxes inside of there and figure out what those are doing. So yeah, I might search up some key terms and kind of go, okay, what's this doing? How relevant is it to the exact feature that I'm trying to implement? And then I want an input and an output. So I'll create kind of an input and an output area and then the area that I need to work within. And so I want one piece or one layer before and one layer after. So I can kind of determine, hey, this feature needs me to take in this, and this is what it's expecting back out of this, and kind of put some parameters or some ideology behind that.
Yeah, that is an excellent approach, right? You know, take your black box because you know you're going to have it, right? And you feed it the in and you know what the out should be, right? And that's the concept of testing as well, right? You know, given some known variables, I should be able to put it through this who knows what in this machine, right? And I should be able to expect what's coming back out of it. And so, you know, you're building your own little boxes, like you said there, to kind of help identify those types of things, you know?
So I think that compartmentalizing.
You even touch on maybe even another good spot, right? So say, you know, you've gotten a chance to maybe vaguely familiarize yourself with your section of code, review over the tests that they exist, you know, knock on wood that your company has written tests so far. That's a whole nother deep dive. But starting from that point, right, start writing tests for your own stuff, right? We talk about test-driven development, or even writing the test after the fact. I think both of those things can really resolve some of that concern and frustration you have around, oh, holy cow, let me make sure I can get into this code and not damage too many other things, right? And that's where, you know, it is the company's responsibility or the senior leadership in your department's responsibility to make sure testing is written so that when your juniors are brought on, you can trust that they can get into an application, write what they need to, and not break anything. It's also where we talk a little bit about code ninjas, right? We've had this conversation. Code ninja being the idea that you should be able to write code. And if I come back and I look at all the code entirely, I shouldn't be able to distinguish, well, this was obviously written by one developer and this other part was written by another. So I think even taking yourself to familiarize yourself with what is the styling of the code that is being written by my peers that can allow me to be that code ninja so I can not only better understand what you wrote, why you wrote it that way, but then I can add to it in a similar pattern.
Yeah, you know, and if you're lucky enough, you can even log in with someone else's Git credentials and let the blame fall on them when it's smart, right?
Listen, that only happened a few times.
No, but what's funny is I think that does lead to that concept of taking a monolithic application and breaking it into kind of a more microservice architecture, right? You know, if you are given a task as a junior developer, it's always best to, you know, isolate your environment. you know, write the code, make sure it's going to function the way that you need it to function before you just dive into this big giant application and you start changing stuff in there, right? Get your little piece to function correctly first in an isolated environment, and then go move it into, you know, the monolithic application, right? Or if you're to that point where you can actually start breaking things into microservices, then great, let's go throw this one functional piece that does work with given, you know, specific input, it always produces the correct output. Let's go throw that into a microservice, right? And let's stop just, you know, gluing and tacking and duct taping pieces onto this monolithic monster, right? Because every single application starts off small, right? And it's just, it grows crazy fast. And I think when you have unnecessary or inappropriate layers of abstraction, it gets hard. And then I think that that's also kind of one of those things where if you just abstract correctly the right ideas, you can actually take this horn off of this monster and go throw it into a completely different service and leave it there so that it's not actually a part of the giant code beast, right? Let's try to get away from these giant applications that are 600 files, and again, that may be a small application in Visual Studio, right? But let's try to break that apart. Let's follow some abstraction principles. Let's start implementing some of those types of things of microservices.
Absolutely. No, 10,000 line files.
I do have that general rule of thumb, right? In that concept of abstraction in these large projects, right? If I have to scroll through your file, your file's already too large, so let's abstract.
What size font are you scrolling to?
you know.
Don't worry about that.
We won't worry about that.
But you have a point, right? And typically I like to think of it more in line numbers, right? Don't go over 120 lines in a single file. And obviously that's very dogmatic. That's very like, oh, that's, you know. But a good rule of thumb, right? I think that in that sense, if a junior can come into that situation and, you know, as seniors, we can be better in providing them more of those contextual, like, here is your box, right? I have this application may be a monolith, but here is your story essentially of that monolith, right? Let's keep you on this floor. But that said, you know, anytime a junior can enter into a project and it is already microserviced out, and it is broken down into these smaller pieces, it can be so much easier for them to enter into. And with kind of the way software applications have gone nowadays, you're definitely seeing newer applications and things that have been spun up being built that way, right? You have, you know, here's this piece of the application, this piece of the application, and it's definitely broken out. You know, when it's, you're diving into more older applications is definitely when you're starting to see that, because cloud certainly facilitates microservices.
Yeah, so I mean, depending on who your architect is, right?
That's true. I guess that's absolutely.
I've seen monolithic say, "Hey, we're now cloud," and they've taken their entire monolithic and just chunked it into something like Azure AWS, and it's like, yes, so you have an AWS function that's just going to fire off a Lambda expression that starts your entire application and never dies. Right? That's not serverless. That's not cloud.
It's just one giant monolithic microservice. Just push those words together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think you capitalized on something there, Mark, too. I find that after every hour or every couple hundred lines of code, that's sufficient time for me to have written myself into a very bad position that merits refactoring. And so maybe I should take a step back. And, you know, it might not be those 200, 300 lines might be perfectly fine altogether, or they might merit, you know, an abstraction of some sort. So.
And I think you even bring up a good, you touched on a word there that kind of triggered something for me, is refactoring, right? You know, that's something that a lot of juniors are even possibly going to face is, hey, good job writing that thing, but it's not going to work 100% how we need it. Let's go refactor it, right? And I think, though, that just that refactorization process is how you avoid, you know, how you become more of that code ninja. Say, okay, let me write this to where it works. Don't forget to come back to it. And I feel like that happens a lot of times when you're just starting into a new project, just starting into a new company, and you just want to push out code. I want to prove to these guys and these gals that I can write code. I can do the job they hired me for. And I think to an extent, like, that's great and all, but no author publishes their rough draft, right? Kind of the same code.
That is the exact same philosophy, right? That's the very principle behind, you know, red, green, refactor. You know, you have your test-driven development principles that drill this into our heads. And sometimes as developers, like you said, you know, we may be, so hard pressed to just, you know, deliver a feature, or, you know, like you said, from that junior aspect, I want to prove to these people that I actually have what it takes. If you want to prove that you actually have what it takes, go through the necessary steps, write your tests, make sure your code's not brittle. You know, because if I can supply a bad parameter and your entire function or feature crashes, you know, that's something that you should have been able to catch yourself, right? And if you're just following those appropriate principles, you know, behind test-driven development, you're going to get there, right? And I would much rather have a junior take an extra day and have a full test suite behind that feature than to just kind of rush something through.
My code output for today is 2,000 lines. You know, that's more likely to scare me than impress me.
Oh, man, 2,000 lines in a day.
How many node modules did you install?
Hopefully.
We're just going to deny that pull request.
I think it's important, though, to even highlight, like, circling back to the testing thing, right? When you're jumping into those projects, if they don't have tests, again, like, somebody made a problem a long time ago, but that doesn't mean you can't start on that solution, right? And absolutely. And like you said, I would be very impressed as a junior if a junior came in to one of the projects that, you know, I guarantee 100% we have all
full code, I didn't write it, right?
Full code coverage. Then somebody else wrote, yeah. And they started implementing those tests and put that wrapper around it, because to me it shows, okay, you know, you can recognize good software development.
Absolutely. And then to boot, if that same person is putting that test-driven idea into their continuous integration, continuous development pipeline, you know, that person there is, that's golden, right? You've definitely proven yourself if you can kind of set that up. You know, for me, I would love to be able to hand those types of tasks over to juniors. So, you know, that may be one of those things that, you know, as you're trying to dive into this career field, as you're trying to focus on the, you know, the skills that are actually really needed in the industry today. One of the things that I usually try and push those new people towards are the newer features, right? You're not going to be able to compete against a 20-year veteran in a language like C#, right? But if I have a 20-year veteran who I'm just now barely introducing to that kind of CI/CD pipeline, you know, that's right where those juniors can really start to shine. You know, set up those tests, set up those integrated environments, and, you know, dive into GitHub Actions. Pay a lot of attention there. That's where all this industry is actually moving towards. And so that's one of those areas where juniors can now really, really shine. And so I think that would absolutely be worth, quite frankly, anyone's time. But if you're trying to, you know, figure out that secret to getting into the industry, you know, that very much could be your door in.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty much all the topics we have for today. So appreciate, you know, everyone joining us today on the podcast for our very first episode of the Dev Team. Insights, thoughts, gentlemen, things to come?
Yeah, I think this was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to more episodes. I'd like to get some user engagement over some time, so we'll set up a comments section, be able to take questions and whatnot, maybe in a future episode.
Touch on some of the topics that, you know, and viewers or listeners, I guess, are interested in.
Yeah, our goal is, you know, ultimately we want to provide some of that extra, you know, conversational pieces and education for, you know, anyone, whether they're a bootcamp grad or self-taught, or, you know, whether they went to a formal institution, just kind of those people entering into the field, as well as possibly even some of the insight for our seniors and how they could possibly improve when they're engaging with their juniors. But that's it for us today. So thanks again for joining us.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Dev Team. If you're interested in learning more about our team or possibly starting a career in software development, reach out to us at BoiseCodeWorks.com. Follow us on Facebook and like and subscribe to this podcast to continue to receive the latest updates. Until then, from The Dev Team, remember, if you want clean code, wash your hands.